Can't we just turn it off? Don't we see enough of this in the news? I want to protect Jesus from all this ugliness. Let him inspire me with his visions of the kingdom of heaven without him having to get trampled by the kingdoms we actually live in. We know the world of this text. The world of professional jealousy and trial by media, of secret payoffs and money shuffling, the public displays of innocence and blame shifting, the let's throw a million charges at him and see what sticks approach to justice. We of all people know what a dirty political fight looks like when we see one. It's all about who controls the narrative. If the religious leaders can't nail Jesus for his theological crimes, they'll just find another way to paint him guilty. Call him a traitor, a threat to public safety, a dangerous revolutionary. When your spy tries to turn on you, don't give him a way out. Turn his desperation into a weapon for your arsenal. You can just see the headline. Close associate of accused traitor kills himself, news at 11. Then do what you do. Clean up the mess. Hide the money trail. Pay cash, for God's sake. Make sure they never trace it back to you. Find some Law and Order guy who wants to score points with his constituents. Let him be the hero who takes the menace off the streets. Play him like a fiddle. Let him get his photo up. Tell him he's making the world safer by using the weapons only he can wield. Make yesterday's notorious murderer your foil. Make him look like a freedom fighter in comparison to your real villain. Let the people think their voices are really being heard this time. When your politician balks at the cravenness of this swap and expresses some inconvenient moral qualms, give him a way to save face if it all goes south and backfires. Let him have a pleasant dinner with his wife that night. What does it really cost you? Let him wash his hands if he wants to. Pretend that he's really not the one signing the death warrant. When he wants the authority but not the blame, tell him you've got that covered. Convince the people they're only doing their patriotic duty by calling for an innocent man's death. Satisfy their bloodlust without telling them that that's what you're doing. Get them to think that it was all their idea. As Jim pointed out, if everyone's to blame, then no one's to blame. Besides, it's easier to control the narrative when your opponent refuses to speak. What was Jesus thinking, representing himself? He needed his own battalion of lawyers, his own spin room. He needed to fight fire with fire if he was ever going to get out of this alive. Why isn't he raising his voice in protest? Why is he letting the religious bullies once again be the loudest, most bloodthirsty voices in the room? It's as if he doesn't know the rules of the game. Or if he does know them, he doesn't recognize them as valid. If he plays by their rules, he grants their game legitimacy. He's not going to let them tell him what it means for him to be a king. So let them win this round. Let them exhaust their weaponry, do their worst. He's got his eyes on the long game. It's hard for us sometimes to confront our political realities in this space. We're sick of the bombardment of conflicting narratives filling up every possible screen. The lurid or the sentimental masking the large-scale evil that surrounds us every day, that robes itself in the flag, the Bible, while trouncing on the very people Jesus insisted we see and speak up for. We come here for beauty, for respite, for sanctuary. We want to take refuge here and get lost in story and ritual. We want to leave our weapons at the door and then not be made to feel bad for picking them up when we leave. What the scene of the Passion does is remind us that the world in here is connected to the world out there. If our faith doesn't equip us for the long game, if it doesn't give us tools other than the ones we already have, then we are bound to get sucked up into the latest hysteria. We're bound to get co-opted into somebody else's grab for power. And if we're not careful, we'll find ourselves becoming the loudest, most bloodthirsty voices in the room. Theologian Karl Barth addressed this tension we face, our desire to live in some other kind of time, at least while we're here. We don't like having to name a politician in our creed every week, especially one this ignoble and weak-willed. Why give Pontius Pilate that kind of airtime? The only other person mentioned by name in the creed other than Jesus is Mary. Can't we elevate our discourse above such time-bound realities? Barth says that we identify Pilate by name precisely because, and I quote, "This passion of Jesus Christ did not take place in heaven, or in some remote planet, or even in some world of ideas. It took place in our time, in the center of the world history in which our human life is played out. God has come into our life in its utter unloveliness and frightfulness. It is not necessary to close our eyes to this, for God has not closed his either. He has entered into it all." So what happens when we open the world in here to the world out there? When we let these worlds speak to each other? We may just find that the one who feeds and sustains and inspires us here can do the same out there. That he can give us strength to fight the next good fight, but with tools that don't just make us mirror images of our adversaries. That the Jesus spoken of so glibly in our culture, the one who's become an unrecognizable advocate for nationalism and greed, is not the only Jesus out there. We may even learn at last what it means for him, for us, excuse me, we may even learn at last what it means for him to be our king.